Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the September 20th meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. We would like to start our meeting, as is our custom, with a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Let the record reflect that all members, with the exception of Commissioner Lucas, are present. The meeting is called to order. We do have a quorum. We will now proceed with the Pledge of Allegiance, so please stand and join us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the Republic of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Got things kind of twisted around there for a minute. This is a time set aside for announcements. Are there any Planning Commissioner announcements to be made tonight? None? No? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to the public. This is a public comment period, so anyone who would like to address the commission on any issue, there will be public comment on our public hearing item tonight, but anyone who'd like to speak on anything, please, this is the time, come forward. We'd love to hear from you. Okay. Seeing none, we will move right along then to the consent calendar, and the consent calendar tonight has two items on it. Item A1, the current advanced planning and processing list, and A2, the minutes from our August 16th meeting. Are there any comments, discussion, questions? Do we have a motion then to approve the consent calendar?
I'll move that we approve the consent calendar.
Second.
So we have a motion. We have a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. So then we will move right on to item number B, which is our public hearing item for this evening. This is case number CP0-365. This was continued from our September 6th meeting. At the request of the applicant, and involves a site at 3093 Beachcomber here in Morro Bay, and I believe that Cindy is going to give us a staff report on this.
Thank you. Good evening, Chairperson Teft and members of the Planning Commission. This is tonight's public hearing. It is consideration of adoption of a mitigated negative declaration and approval of a coastal development permit for 3093 Beachcomber. And we have a presentation PowerPoint on the overhead projector. The proposed development would be new construction of a single-story 3,041-square-foot home with 478-square-foot garage and 36-square-foot deck. The property, as you see in the vicinity map, is highlighted in red. It is at the corner of Beachcomber and Hatteras. And to the north, it is adjacent to a vacant State Park-owned parcel of land that provides existing coastal access. And it is also located in the R1 S2A Overlay Zoning District. Prior to the September 6th Planning Commission hearing, this item was previously continued from October 20th, 2015, where the Planning Commission at that time reviewed the project and continued it to a date uncertain in order to allow the applicant to submit revised plans which would accurately reflect the 50-foot buffer setback for sand dune habitat as required by the city's local coastal plan and policies related to environmentally sensitive habitat area. And since then, the applicant has submitted revised plans. I will walk you through them in a moment. Here's an image of the existing site. It is vacant beachfront-owned property. And here is another aerial image that shows the property in context with the existing residential neighborhood. Located here, it's the last vacant residential lot at the end of Beachcomber. Many of the other homes were built decades ago. This is the last lot to be developed. So under the California Environmental Quality Act, the project did involve an initial study, which was prepared and resulted in a mitigated negative declaration. Upon completion of that document, it was routed to the State Clearinghouse on September 18, 2014, for the required 30-day period. We did receive one comment letter from the Coastal Commission at that time with concerns regarding meeting the city's sand dune habitat requirements for the 50-foot buffer setback. That is the discussion for tonight with the revised plans. There was mitigation that was recommended for the overall project under aesthetics, air quality, biological resources, cultural resources, geology, soils, hazards, hydrology. And these items have all been incorporated as mitigation measures. They are incorporated as conditions of approval, and you will find them in Exhibit A in the proposed resolution for your consideration. So in 2015, this is the site plan that the Planning Commission saw, and the top image is the topographic survey, which shows the red line to the left, based on a biological report that was prepared as part of the environmental review, it shows the line of the coastal dune habitat. The city's local coastal plan requires that all development be set back 50 feet. The applicant had presented the second red line as the proposed 50-foot setback, when in reality, to properly set back 50 feet in all directions from this ESHA line, the blue line is the correct line. And so the project that was proposed showed the green outline of the home and did show encroachment into that buffer setback. The revised plans before you today shows the same topographic survey with the correct lines, and this is the redrawn line. And now there is a revised plan which shows no structure encroachment into the 50-foot buffer setback other than some minor areas where there are roof eaves which project into the setback. And roof eaves are allowed per the city's local coastal plan to project into that buffer setback. The home today has been made smaller, and it is now proposed at 254 square feet smaller than the 2015 version. So since the 2015 Planning Commission hearing, the applicant did review this project with both staff and the Coastal Commission regarding this sand dune habitat requirement, and they did prepare an addendum to the biological report that was attached to the staff report as Exhibit C, which suggested that there may be alternative measures which would allow structure encroachment into the 50-foot buffer setback. Unfortunately, the LCP in this case does not allow for a buffer reduction in this case, and accordingly, the applicant, that direction was provided to the applicant by both staff and the Coastal Commission staff, and thus we have the revised site plan. Here's a little easier image to read. This shows the floor plan. There was impacts to the living room area and a bedroom. The red line on the screen here denotes that 50-foot buffer line wherein a development cannot encroach past that. Also, I'd like to point out, too, that there, as part of the revised plans, the only change was along this rear and side. There are no changes to the front or side setbacks, and there was no change proposed to the height of the home. In 2015, this is the visual simulation that the Planning Commission saw. Because of the changes to the side setback and the rear setback, but the northwest corner of the home, staff requested that the applicant provide a revised visual simulation. And this is the visual simulation that was included in the staff report. This does include the proposed landscaping that was not depicted in the earlier visual simulation, excuse me. And then because this does not show the neighboring street, whereas this image does, staff did receive a second visual simulation this afternoon from the applicant. And this shows a more zoomed out version where you can see the coastal access there to the north. And then these slides also show the elevations, pretty much the same. The south elevation is on the top, neighboring to the home, and then the bottom elevation shows the north elevation, chimney on the side, and then chimney in the front. The west elevation is stepped back, as you could see in the site plan and in the floor plan. And then as well, the east elevation, which faces the street, which is substantially the same as what the Planning Commission saw in 2015. And one thing I would like to point out is staff did receive correspondence from an interested neighbor. A copy of that was emailed to the commission this afternoon, as well as a paper copy was provided to you. There is also paper copies of both the revised visual simulation and the email that was entered into the public record available at the counter for the public. The email was received from a neighbor who was concerned about visual impacts to his home by potentially relocating an existing power pole, or not the power pole, but the guy wire that leads to the power pole. Staff did work with this neighbor to connect them with PG&E, their service planning department, as that's not something that, one, the city doesn't protect private views, but also it's typically outside of the planning process as PG&E utility company decides how those guy wires get put in. Which leads us to staff's recommendation is to conditionally approve the project as revised by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 2016 and adopt the mitigated negative declaration that was included in your staff report with the environmental mitigation measures for the project depicted on site development plans. The revised plans dated September 12, 2016. And with that, I'm available to answer any questions. Also, the applicant and his representative are here as well to speak during the public hearing.
Very well. Are there any, do any members of the commission have any ex parte communications to report on this?
I did meet the neighbor to the south of the property. You're talking to Bridget.
I did have occasion to run into the neighbor to the south when I went to look at the property. We talked briefly about the telephone pole, the utility pole problem. That was it.
Okay. Then are there any questions for staff at this point?
Yeah.
Sure.
When you were talking to PG&E, did you ask them about the potential for undergrounding their service drop?
I myself did not speak to PG&E. That information was provided to both the neighbor, and then last year that information, I believe, was provided to the applicant then.
And we have requirements on new developments that require undergrounding and utilities. Would this be applicable here?
No, because in the general plan, it actually talks about exclusion of single-family homes, so it would not be subject to requiring them to underground, and they're not in an undergrounding district.
I just have a comment on what Commissioner Zuber brought up. I remember when I used to be on call in Cayucas, and you know Pacific there, and when it's windy and those wires are whipping all over the place, I would like to someday see all that really be put underground, but not at the expense of this guy, obviously. But I think that if you ever get a chance to maybe have some dialogue with PG&E, I strongly, especially with the storm intensities that we are getting predictions from climate change and stuff, I think it'll behoove us to kind of do that someday soon, especially on the beach side.
Any other? I just have one question, Cindy. We have two different photo simulations here. The one in the handout, the one in the staff report, and then the one that was presented tonight. And that they're significantly different in that one of them has stone. The front wall is primarily stone, and the other one is primarily plaster. So, do we know which one of those is going to be real?
I believe it's the one that's in the Planning Commission staff report. So what happened is when that visual simulation was provided, I got the one that was in the staff report. I had asked the applicant's architect a couple of months ago to provide a simulation that would show the streetscape. Unfortunately, there was some miscommunication, and what they gave me was a very zoomed-in version. And as you see in the staff report, you can't see any of the neighboring homes. And then due to our requirements to publish the Planning Commission packet, I had asked the architect to provide another simulation prior to the meeting so we could see the neighborhood. And I think it was just due to the rushed nature of preparing for tonight that facade detail got left out. But I'm sure the applicant can talk about what their design goals are.
Sure. I was going to hold this to talk to the applicant, but... I'll bring it up now. According to the simulation, according to the site plan, we now have, which changed from the previous site plan, we now have essentially a driveway across the entire frontage of the property. I thought there was a limitation on driveway width in residential districts.
Yes, so the driveway width is limited to no more than 50% of the frontage. They're proposing that the driveway be that driveway which is in front of the garage door. They're also proposing, as you can see obviously on the north side, that be permeable pavers so that it's not landscaped, it's additional area, but that it would be not permitted as a driveway.
But it's essentially a driveway because it's paved all the way to the street.
Right. And so certainly the commission could choose to condition that perhaps have a curb or some other mechanism to prevent that from being used as 100% driveway.
Okay. Any other questions at this point? Then this is a public hearing. We will open it up for public comment. Typically, we'd like to invite the applicant or applicant's representative to speak first if they're here. I'd like to hear from you.
Good evening, planning commissioners and staff. My name is John Kilpilainen, and I am an agent for Mr. and Mrs. LaPlante, who are the property owners. Mr. LaPlante is sitting here with us this evening, and we very much appreciate the opportunity of your considering this project again, and we are hopeful that we have properly met all of the conditions and requirements that have been have become apparent through this process. I would like to take the opportunity to just very, very briefly remind the planning commissioners of comments that were made last year when we were here of the extreme frustration experienced by the property owner in the process of getting to this point. And we feel that once again that at working with staff and other consultants that we have met all of the requirements that were given to us. Regarding the PG&E situation, we have not approached PG&E yet because we have not known that we have a project. So we wanted to get to a point where the project is approved, meet with PG&E, and review what the options are. We certainly do not have the intent of blocking anyone's view. I'm not sure. It seems to me that the power location is the southwest corner of the property, which is kind of where the garage is. And if anything were to occur in that area, it seems to me that the house is blocking the view rather than a guy wire. But I'm not quite sure I understand the neighbor's concern, but that's just my initial thought on it. I'm also a little bit confused on the city's definition of driveway. To me, a driveway is to get from point A to point B or from the street to the garage. So there's an area designated for driveway, and the rest of it are pavers that don't drive anywhere. It's to reduce landscaping. And there is a possibility that homeowners or guests may park there. I don't know that, but it seems to me that the street is kind of narrow for parking, and the first place that individuals would want to park is in the two public parking spaces that immediately adjacent that the community uses, the beachgoers are using. So if the homeowner chooses to use those spots, I don't see why he couldn't, but then it seems like we're depriving the public of an opportunity to park there. So I don't know what the city's requirements and regulations are, but as a public citizen, it makes sense to me that if a homeowner can provide off-street parking for themselves, that would be a good thing. That's my opinion. I have nothing further to say other than thank you for letting us be here. We hope that you find that the corrections that we've made are acceptable to you. Do you have questions for me?
Well, while we have the public comment open, are there any questions for the applicant or the applicant's representative? Okay, I don't see any.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else who'd like to speak on this?
Hello, my name is Julian Lipschitz. I own the house with my wife at 3090 Beachcomber, and I was listening to what you said in regards to the driveways and things. I think it's very important that there is access where people can park on the street there, because if it was all a driveway, that whole area would get really jammed up, because if you go down Hatteras, that's a very small area there, and it'd be so congested, I could see problems arising from that. So I just wanted to bring that point up. So I understand what you said, and I'm thank you for bringing that up.
Okay. Anyone else? Seeing none, we will close public comment, bring it back to staff for or bring it back to the commission for discussion. Jerry, you got off easy last week, so yeah. We're going to pick on you.
Okay, there you go. That's what I get for taking a week off.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a couple things, and I'll try to keep it brief. I respectfully disagree with the applicant. You know, that is a driveway. If you have a driveway, you're then depriving street parking at that location. You're also you're also denigrating the streetscape of, you know, and the curbside appeal of your house. There's a reason why we have a limitation on the width of driveways, and this is essentially a prime example, so it doesn't become essentially a parking lot in front of all the houses. So I would be looking to restrict the driveway, and, you know, would caution for a landscaping barrier to buffer the front elevation from the streetscape. Another comment is that, you know, I think I brought it up at this point last time this was here, and there's two comments that I brought up before that I'll reiterate. One was that this is a perfect time to underground your utility drop, your service drop. You can essentially for essentially the same cost, you can run conduit to that power pole on the southeast corner of your property, and bring your utilities underground from the power pole. So, and what that will do for you as a benefit, that will actually, you'll be in place and you'll already have that in place for in the future if, you know, if they ever underground all the utilities in the neighborhood. It just cleans up one more set of wires that you won't have to look at either, or your neighbors won't have to look at. So I just recommend that to you now while you're doing the construction. The other thing too is that we'd discussed the gate situation, and we'd also discussed the detailing on the south and the north elevation. And we were looking, according to our design guidelines, the detailing should be consistent in quality from the front to the side elevations and the back elevations. And I don't see that happening. And we had actually brought that up as a comment before, and I don't see anything that had been, this hadn't been taken care of. So I would once again reiterate that as a condition, that we have a higher level of detail on the, especially the north elevation, because that's the elevation that's going to be exposed to the public. You do have a corner lot, so you do have a responsibility for multiple elevations that are going to be exposed to the public, and I think that's something worthwhile. So, you know, those are my concerns about this project, and I'd like to hear the rest of the commission.
Okay. Joe?
Well, if I understand correctly, there's no definitive answer as to whether the telephone pole itself or the utility pole has to be moved or not. It probably won't, but that's still a possibility, too. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So that would have some, you know, major consequences in terms of the neighbor. But I realize we're not, the ordinance doesn't protect view, but I'd like to know what the status of that utility pole is. In this rendering that I'm looking at, there's what looks to me like an L-shaped cement paving. So the part of the cement paving that runs parallel to the street, I would assume that the applicant would be disposed. That's just sort of general parking. Anyone in the neighborhood could use that space. I'm a little concerned about the permeable brick, because that also lends itself to parking. It's a large house. It could accommodate a fair number of people and the attendant large number of vehicles, and I would hate to see 4, 5, or 6 vehicles parked in front of the home. And I doubt if the neighbors would either. I suspect that some sort of landscaping might be more appropriate than the permeable brick. Given the size of the house and the attendant expense and of the real estate and the house, and the sensitivity of this particular location, given the public beach and all that, I would like to see a visual representation in some sort of 3D format of what the view of the house looks like from the beach, particularly to see what sort of details are part of the facade from the western direction. And then I have a question about landscaping. I will freely admit my ignorance here. From reading the report, I saw a mention of native plants, a landscape plan with native plants, presumably to be planted within the property, but within this buffer zone. And so I'm wondering, you know, what the advantage of a buffer zone is if that buffer zone is going to be considerably disrupted by the landscaping, and at this point not knowing what the landscaping is.
There is a mitigation that a final landscape plan be submitted and prepared by a qualified botanist that would minimize impacts to the sand dune habitat. So that is addressed.
Okay. And then there was a lot of discussion about fencing, too, both temporary and permanent. So I guess the underlying assumption is that these fences can be put in without a whole lot of upsetting of the terrain and then removed and then permanent fencing put in as well?
Right, yeah. For instance, on the review of the Moro shoulder band snail, one of the requirements that U.S. Fish and Wildlife had was that there be fencing put in to prevent or to minimize impact to sensitive species out there. So there are, you see that in the mitigations for construction fencing to minimize impact to the ESHA, and then also, you know, just during the course of the project.
So there would be, when the project is completed, there would be some sort of permanent fencing on the western boundary of the property?
I believe the plans do show fencing. Yeah.
Well, I recall fencing on the three boundaries, but I looked, but for a variety of reasons, I don't have access to email in the last couple of days, but I didn't recall what the fencing was on that western boundary.
That could be something that could be confirmed with the applicant. The site plan shows 3-foot fencing in the front setback area and then the typical 6-foot fencing on the north and south elevation. So
right.
Confirmation from the applicant.
And I'm not suggesting that a fencing facing the beach is a good idea. It just seemed ambiguous to me. In fact, I would probably be in favor of there not being fencing there. And then I was wondering what are the limitations on the part of the landowner, the property owner, as to what he can do on that portion of the property in terms of just utilizing it for his recreation?
So ESHA policies, so the only thing that can be within ESHA buffer areas, it does allow for fences and eaves. So he could have a fence that would be consistent with the LCP on the west property line. We've had other projects where, you know, they were not allowed to have any development within the ESHA area, and it's just passive open. Can they put like a concrete pad and put out some, you know, massive deck or hot tub? No, because that would be, you know, permanent structure. I mean, it's something that's permeable and prevents impact to those sensitive resources.
Okay.
Richard? Cindy, can you... a couple things. I agree with Commissioner Luer about the getting the underground utilities. If you can do that, that would be awesome, just from a safety standpoint. Can you give me a little bit more clarity on the driveway part or how you view it? Okay, because what we got is a L-shaped permeable cement pavers, right?
So they're proposing a standard 20-foot driveway in front of the garage.
Right.
That's not proposed as permeable paver, mm-hmm. to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. The area to the north of the driveway, they've proposed that as a permeable paver. You know, staff did not view that as an additional driveway. They are showing landscaping in the front, in the middle area. So
yeah.
It is mitigated by that it's not an entire impervious area from left to right across the property that their landscape plan shows.
Yeah, so you've got the brown pavers in front, right? And so you're looking at that as breaking up the whole lot in the front.
Right, because it's a different material.
Okay. I reviewed the tapes from October, just to try to recall what we talked about. And I remember the Commissioner Lucas mentioning something on the, that'll be the north side, a little more articulation. And, I don't have really a problem with the project. I kind of like it, I like the stonework. I like it, So I think that the main issue was addressed. I that setback, as I always consider that very serious, And I think that was addressed, and I don't necessarily have an issue with the way it's laid out to the street. So that's kind of where I sit on that.
Okay. Well, I don't really have anything new to add. I am going to echo what several of the other commissioners have said about this roll curb. I think I would like to see a condition that requires a traditional curb aside from the 20-foot driveway area. For one thing, our municipal code prohibits parking in a front yard setback. So what we have here is a setup that makes it convenient to park illegally. I don't think that's a great way to go. It looks to me like pretty much all of the concrete that's not driveway is actually in the right of way and would require an encroachment permit anyway. So I wouldn't be in favor of that happening.
This area out here.
In terms of articulation, I will say, number one, I hope that the new simulation that we've gotten is not is the one that's not correct, because I think the house is much more attractive with the stone on the front. In terms of the articulation, this simulation, I think, is not showing a 6-foot fence, which is what's proposed. So I realize the house will be much less visible if there's a 6-foot fence. I would like to see some attention to the north side in terms of breaking it up a little bit better. I don't think you have to change your floor plan. I don't think you have to change, I'd just like to see, maybe some variation in color or texture or material or something there, because that is a public view of the house. It's a public facade of the house. But I'm not going to make that a condition. I'm going to leave that up to I'm going to express that to staff and let them work with the applicant, because I think it can be accomplished with some relatively minor attention. The power pole looks to me like it's much closer to this house than the other power poles are to some of the other houses that they're serving. So no one has said it's going to be moved. It doesn't look likely that it would. The photo simulation makes me worry a little bit about the next pole down that seems to be leaning at a pretty significant angle. So I don't know what's going on there. So, And in terms of the west facade, the one thing I notice is that really it's a pretty far distance from the part of the beach that's going to be used by the public to this house. It's looks like it's a couple hundred feet at least with intervening vegetation. So I don't think that the west side of the house is going to be, and the west side of the house actually has quite a bit of articulation already. To me, that's fine. I'd like to see them put a little thought into that north view. But overall, you know, I think the house is, you know, this house would obviously not be appropriate to some neighborhoods in Morro Bay, but it's in a neighborhood where I think, you know, it is consistent with the rest of the development in the area. I am prepared to, with those few small comments, I'm prepared to support the project.
So I get some clarification? So a couple of you have mentioned the north elevation. The north elevation has a pilaster at the corner. It has a set-in patio area. It has a plane that's the same for about 23 feet, and then there's a plane change again, mm-hmm. and it's 19 feet. I would say the south elevation is all one.
Right.
But the north elevation has quite a bit. And then as you get into the area that is stepping back from you, I mean, there's a lot going on that elevation with the chimney and stuff.
It may just be the photo simulation that makes it that doesn't show the changes of plane very, very effectively.
Okay. I was just looking at the picture, and then at the site plan, you can see where it changes.
Yeah.
You know, one, two, three times in that, you know, whatever 50-ish plus foot elevation that's mostly the same. And then as soon as you get to the backyard, it starts stepping way back. So that's, I don't know if that's really an issue.
But Scott, it's the south and the north elevation. It's mostly the treatment of the windows.
Okay.
The detailing around the windows are not consistent with what was done with the front.
And okay. That's a good...
The window, the articulation that was foisted upon them by the Esha boundary actually makes that facade better and more articulated, but they didn't carry through with as much with the window and the detailing. Where, you know, to me, where you have the plasters and the stone fencing and the gating makes it breaks it down more into human scale than at the, you know, at that side. But then definitely on the south elevation, they didn't detail out the windows at all.
No, I mean, you can see the south elevation is fairly plain. I would not be making the same commentary related to the north that I just referenced versus the south. The south is sort of unadorned. Right,
yeah. That's what I'm seeing. So
yeah, and I focused more on the north because it is a public.
Right.
That's what everybody's going to be walking by. Although there will be a 6-foot fence and plates range over on that side from 8.5 to it looks like about 10.5 maybe on that side. So. You're really not going to see a whole bunch of it with a 6-foot fence in front of it, but you'll see a little bit.
But I think your comments kind of put my mind at ease on that.
Okay. All right.
I think I was responding to the photo stimulations, which just don't really show the elevations very well.
I would agree that they don't. They don't do a great job of that.
You know, and then just another comment. I don't have a problem with the permeable pavement in front. But what I do have a problem with is in the right of way of them paving from their property line to the curb line.
So there's a couple things we could do there. I mean, I was kind of thinking this as you guys were talking. It seemed like several of you had the issue. Certainly, I think we're not going to put it. We can't really put a condition on it to have a regular curb if the others are rolled up and down the street, and I don't know what they are, but the curb's going to match whatever's there in the right-of-way. But we certainly can require landscaping and improvements in that area so you can't drive over them, and so you can still park a car adjacent to them. The only question then becomes, with based on your comment, Commissioner Luhr, how much do you want to alter or change that paved patio-ish parking area that's to the ocean side of that, or towards that, between that and the house? Because you could still draw at that point, you could still drive into the driveway and park over there that way. You could be okay with that, and we won't say anything else about it. Or you could say, that's not okay either, and we want to put landscaping in that area so they can't do that either, and make it clear that they shouldn't be parking there. I would sort of. That's the question we want answers to, so we can, you know, craft appropriate conditions, I guess, is what I'm saying. And that's to all of you, not just Commissioner Luhr.
Yeah, and to me, if they want to, you know, what I'm concerned about is that they're going to put an RV there, you know, and then that's not a real gift to the neighborhood. But I don't have a problem with the permeable paving there, as long as there's in the right of way that it's landscaped from the property line to the street, so that they're not taking up street parking for their private parking, because for one thing, nobody, you know, that becomes private, you know, there's public, semi-public, semi-private, and private area. As soon as they pave that, then that becomes their private area, which people won't park in front of it.
They won't. They'll think that they won't. I would agree that it can serve to discourage folks from parking there. So the comment's well taken.
Yeah. So that would be my consideration.
Okay.
Well, then I guess we don't have to be specific about this. We could just say that the landscaping plan show and or curb and gutter will prevent access to the permeable area from the street, or shall prevent private parking in the front setback or in the right-of-way adjacent to the front setback.
In the right-of-way, yeah. So, I mean, I think we can simply make the condition specific to that, and then make sure that, you know, like, that's in the condition that we put together, is that the reason we're doing this is so you're not using that for parking purposes, and that it be landscaped in such a manner that would prohibit cars from parking there, or having it look like it's supposed to be for parking, I guess. We can certainly do that.
So I divine that you have another comment that you'd like to make, and I will open public comment for that purpose.
Thank you. I mostly came up to see if I could be helpful in answering any of the speculation or questions. One thing is that it's the applicant's intent to underground the utilities, assuming that they're coming from that pole on the south east side.
Right.
So that's been the intention all along. I'm not sure if the site plan shows that or not, but that's been the intention. So the other thing that I would like to request of you before you vote formally is that we have a clear understanding. I'm a little bit confused now on what direction we may be going or not going. So I would just like to have it, clarified that these are the additional conditions that we're going to be voting on tonight. If any, I don't know. I'm a little bit confused on that. Regarding the west elevation, it's been our impression that if you're standing from the street view where the cars would pull in to park in those two public parking spaces, you're only going to see the house to about where the chimney is right there on the bottom picture where it's showing north. From that point, there's a window on the left and right of the chimney, and then the house juts back 15, 20, 25 feet, I don't recall, before all the rest of that is visible. And at that point, I don't think it's visible from the street. I could be wrong. I don't think so. And it's my understanding that the environmentally sensitive area on the west-hand side is basically closed off to public access. So we do want the house to be attractive, but it's not something the public's going to see from the street or the parking area. Some questions about the amount of detail here in windows. We're open to working on some of that, but there was also a little bit of disappointment on how much money has been spent on this project, and it's not even an approved project. So our intent was, and we had a little bit of correspondence with staff, that we were hoping that we still had an opportunity to make some minor corrections that might be acceptable to everyone. We simply haven't detailed the new western side, which was required of us to redesign. We're not putting together working drawings until we have a project. That would be our hope. But as you can see from the intent of how the project would appear to be pleasing to the owner and the community, they're not intending to just totally abandon what it looks like from any of the views or elevations. I guess I'm saying we don't know, but we're still open.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. I know it's a process to go through this, and I do this too. So I appreciate that, but we have to approve what's on the plan, what's on the page, and what's proposed on the page. We can't, so that puts us in a box where we can't approve your intentions. So we just need clarification that what we approve is what's going to be built. And so that's why we may seem like we are nitpicking, but we're doing it for a very specific reason, so that everybody becomes clear. This is the point in the process where this is our last chance to have any input. And so that's why we want to be clear that you know what's expected and we know what we're going to get. So So I'm just saying, I appreciate your point of view on this. It does become a long process because this is essentially a very sensitive site, and so we just want to make sure that your intentions meet our expectations are, and so that's
again, I think we're saying the exact same thing.
Yeah.
We need to understand what your expectations are so that we
right.
can show that.
Right.
But we're also reluctant to, we have been reluctant to dive in on a project that hasn't been approved and has been lingering.
Right. Now, there's two ways we could go about this, and this is probably more for staff, but I'll jump in and just put my foot into it. So we could continue the project and require everything to come back with another plan, which would delay your project even further. Or we could condition the project with certain specific conditions so that you would be certain what your next step would be, and then the staff would be able to take it from there and you could move forward with your project. So that's what we tried to do on the last meeting, to give you indications of where we were headed, and so it's a little disappointing for me to see that those weren't done at this point, seeing that you wanted to move the project further along quickly. So that is our dilemma here. That is my dilemma with this process. So I'm leaning towards conditioning the project so that you can move on and continue in the process, but that still has to be determined. So, Scott,
so
correct
me
if you could.
That's the process. I mean, and I think that's what you were doing before you kind of took the hiatus and opened the public hearing back up. It seems like we were working our way toward that. That was the discussion we were having to sort of fine-tune where we're going. So you have that direction. I mean, whenever the Planning Commission goes through this process, that's what they do. When they're giving us conditions, I'm talking to them right now and asking them questions about this and trying to refine that so we can get that that clarity.
I will get out of your way. We're pleased that you're working with us on the project, and we're open to reasonable comments and expectations, and we trust your judgment that you will be reasonable with us. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to close public comment again, and I mean, I'm only hearing a couple of relatively minor things here. I mean,
I agree.
What we've boiled it down to is that that we feel that the window detail needs to be equivalent on the north elevation as to the east elevation. I don't know how you feel about the south elevation. I kind of think that's less of an issue because it's not really public, and there's probably going to be another house built to conceal that anyway. I would
include the west elevation on that too.
West elevation. Okay, so the window detail on the north and west elevation should be equivalent to the east elevation. And the only other thing I hear is that the eventual building and or landscape plan should include landscaping, curb and gutter, or other devices which will prevent parking, which will prevent access to the front yard setback for the purpose of parking vehicles, boats, or other things with wheels on them.
Yeah, that's good. We can make that happen. That's pretty straightforward.
So with those conditions, which I think are pretty clear, and I think they're very clear in your mind.
There's nothing there that concerns me, or I really have a question about. I know what we're doing. As does I think Cindy. So.
So then, do we have a motion?
So the landscaping in the parkway, that will be the continuing responsibility of the property owner to maintain.
Yeah, we're going to have them come back and show what they're going to put in there. It won't be paving. It's not going to be a paved area now. And so then it would be a landscaped area of some sort, to prohibit cars from driving up and through it. And then we're going to fashion the condition here such that it's, and maybe we'll, you'll get to, the chair will get to see it because when we're done. So make sure it's done adequately. And the intent's going to be so you're not driving cars over it, and then we're going to have the tent in there to understand that that was the idea, right? We're not just saying you have to landscape this area. It's landscaped in a manner so that it prevents cars from driving up over it and parking in that location. Well, and so as long as that's clear, then if the issue ever comes up again, people don't have to go with, well, do we care if it's landscaped? You can go ahead and pave it. We don't have a landscape requirement. That conversation doesn't happen. The conversation is, hey, you're not supposed to be driving over this area to park your car over there, because that's the intent.
Right. Well, I mean, and it could be landscaping. It could be a curb. It could be a low wall.
Exactly.
Again, our intent is to provide you with the goal, and not necessarily to restrict how you accomplish that goal. So, there are a number of options, whichever you prefer. The whole idea is that you can't get a car from the street to park it in that area.
Well, to be clear, and I don't disagree with that portion of it, but to my way of thinking, in addition to preventing cars from passing over that parkway, I think just the percentage of square footage in the front yard devoted to paving relative to landscaping is something that's inappropriate for the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So that's why I was saying it's more than just a transportation barrier. I think we need to see more green in front of the house, be it in the parkway or in the permeable brickway. I don't think we're in disagreement on that.
Scott, is there any way you can pop this on the screen? I won't take too much time. I just want to kind of get some.
Do we have that slide?
Okay.
Do we have? We might have that slide right there.
Yeah. Okay. Good one. because I just want to be kind of, everybody's on the same page. Okay, that gray area that's right in front of the house, right? Okay, that's adjacent to the brown pavers, right?
That's right of way.
Okay.
Unimproved.
Pardon?
It's unimproved right of way.
Unimproved right of way. What we're proposing is having them put some greenery there, right? Little planters or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's that's perfect.
Yeah, so you can't drive right in the park.
Perfect.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Okay.
That was actually a good slide to bring up.
So that I'm hearing from two of the commissioners that they really would prefer landscaping to hardscape or walls or whatever.
Yes.
So
okay, all right. So we'll mean that's probably it's nice. It would certainly I think probably improve the look of it there. So yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
well, I'm willing to make a motion if.
And I would just add, you know, again for the applicant that. I feel that you're perfectly free to work with staff, and if you want to change the configuration of the pavers a little bit or whatever in order to accommodate that requirement, that's fine, you know.
And so just so everybody understands, those are these minor tweaks to things, are normal. They will happen as they start putting their construction documents together, and they'll be like, oh, well, this portion of the example would be, you know, sometimes we're two-story houses. Oh, we have shear here, so we can't put a window right where we showed it, so we need to move it over. So they'll come in and go, hey, can we move this window over a little bit? And then we need to squeeze it in so it balances on the wall, you know, so the window gets a little bit smaller and they move it over sometimes or what have you. That's a normal process. Those are the type of tweaks we make on the staff side of things as minor modifications to the plan once they start putting the construction documents together. So that's fairly common.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to try and make a motion on this, that we move to approve CPO-365 and adopt the mitigated negative declaration SCH 201-409-1051 for 3093 Beachcomber with the two conditions that we had discussed. Yeah, that the should we word those out, or do you have those, Scott?
So that's the I wrote them down.
Okay, great.
So condition one, and you can tweak me if you want, but I have window detail shall be equivalent on the west and north elevations as to the east elevation. Oh. And then number two is a landscaping plan shall be submitted, which includes landscaping/... curb and gutter or other devices which will prevent access to parking vehicles, boats, and RVs in the front yard setback.
Okay, that's sufficient for me.
Yep.
Okay, that's my motion.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Do we have any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, can we call for a roll call vote?
Commissioner Sadowski.
Aye.
Commissioner Luer.
Yes.
Commissioner Ingraffia.
Yes.
Chairperson Teft.
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0. Thank you.
Good luck with your project.
You're in the home stretch. Okay, moving on to new business. We have a discussion on a recommendation to the City Council for reauthorization of the interim residential design guidelines. Is this anything that you'd like to say to start this off?
Yeah. So I do have a little bit of a lead into this and what I'm asking. So our residential design guidelines were adopted by the City Council. Our interim residential design guidelines, interim being the key word there, were adopted by the City Council on July 14th of 2015. And we're effectively good for a 12-month period, after which we would be supposed to come back and have a discussion about whether we wanted to continue them or not. And so then, you know, potentially reauthorizing them, hence why I'm here. So these would have, that timeline would have ran out back in July and had a little bit of issue with when we changed the email systems and the calendar systems from the old one to the new one. It was, you know, the reminder to myself was on the old one, not the new one. But did come back around. It was, and I brought, you know, kind of did catch up to it not too far after the fact, and think that it is something that's valuable. And I, before taking it directly to council, I thought it would be good to get input from the Planning Commission about whether you'd like to see it continued. My recommendation would be that you make a recommendation to City Council that we continue it for the next 24 months, which would get us through adoption of the general plan, hopefully, and certification by the Coastal Commission. Because as part of that process, we will be addressing what we're going to be doing with design guidelines and how that might work, maybe from a neighborhood-by-neighborhood standpoint or what have you. So that's sort of what I'm asking you to discuss this evening and maybe make a recommendation to City Council on, so I can take it to the first meeting in October to have Council reauthorize that. And I gave you copies of the resolution. It's 52-15, and each of you have a copy over there. So,
right.
In case you're wondering what it says.
Scott, in your mind, what you've already been road testing this for a year, is there anything that needs to be maybe added or taken away to help you? Or do you think that just kind of let it be and let it roll with it, especially with the fact that we don't have a general, you know, with the general plan being
I've referred to this, at least to the General Plan Advisory Committee, as kind of a toolbox that we use. It's a toolbox for us as staff, and it's a toolbox for you as the Planning Commission to point to when projects come back and have some design issues that you find. You could open up the design guidelines and thumb through it and go, well, if the issue I see is this, and this is what the design guidelines say about ways to fix that. So that's options. You can go back and say, hey, we'd like you to redesign it, and please consider these options in doing that, whether it's a height, scale, and bulk issue, or you have a wall that's flat, doesn't have any articulation, and has no windows in it, and, you know, please do something with that. And having not just you thinking of ways to make it, you know, better, but also being able to point to something that, you know, has some graphics and pictures in it, I think is helpful. It's also what we use at the counter because some areas of town, and I've mentioned this to you before, somebody can come in and build a single-family house that doesn't require a planning permit. So, or you can do a substantial addition. It doesn't require a planning permit, you know. And so to have these adopted, I get to go, and when they build the square box that, you know, has no articulation, and you're just like, wow, this is awful. Otherwise, we didn't have anything to point to. You know, here I could say, hey, you know, I got a problem. You're not consistent with the city's adopted design guidelines, so you need to go back, and I have some teeth and a mechanism to go back, you know, and say, hey, and push back a little bit on it, whereas before, a little bit tenuous in doing so because the code didn't really provide me that opportunity. So it helps us do things like that. It just helps us in general when folks come in and ask us, you know, a lot of times, and I encourage them to do this, is bring your design and show it to us before you submit your package. And you know, I'm happy to take PDFs whenever. When you're getting through the design, just keep shooting them to us. We'll keep responding to you, you know, because we'd rather have a project that's pretty dialed in and ready to go versus one that we have to write a 4-page letter to explaining why it's inconsistent with, you know, say, design guidelines or something else. Kind of a long explanation, but we do use it. It is a valuable tool for us and for the planners, and it's also a tool for the Planning Commission. So.
One more thing, if I may. Commissioner Lucas, he points out to something that, you know, when we get these new plans, to have a proper scaled, you know, a visual.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. That's not in our guidelines now, right?
It's not in our guidelines now. It's something we typically, you know, we are conveying, the planners are, you know, suggesting and talking when applications come in, that especially in areas, you know, where visual issues, you know, persist, then we do tell them the expectation is, as you're going forward to the Planning Commission, is that you have these developed. I mean, can't always deal with the quality of it. We try to, you know,
right,
dial things in. Example on the screen there was one that came in kind of at the 11th hour. We asked them to do the game, and then we saw that there was issues. Chair Teff pointed it out right away. It's like, these are not the same. And
yeah,
right before this meeting, I said, that's going to get pointed out. And Cindy's like, I think Chair Teff's going to point that out. I was like, I bet you're right. And then that was the first thing you said. So yeah. I was kind of laughing when you did. So it wasn't. I mean, that wasn't a crystal ball or anything. It's just, yeah. I mean, had we had more time with it, we would have requested that they fix it a little bit. But.
Do you feel that it needs to be spelled out, or do you think that the way it's working right now, just let it be?
I mean, it certainly is something we could add to it if you wanted us to. I mean, that could be direction that the Planning Commission gives. And what I would probably do with that is if I could get you to make the recommendation to have it reauthorized with that addition, I would suggest to the City Council that we do just that, and then I work that language out with the Planning Commission.
Well, but that requiring photo simulations would really, wouldn't that be more appropriately into like the requirements for submittal
requirements, and so we've started work on those and not completed that. That was one of the things that we were going to change our submittal requirements to reflect, and we've been working on that for a little while. It's just we haven't got the updated package. We're also trying to the implementation of our project tracking system has taken much longer than we thought it was going to, and so over time we've been changing our project tracking list to accommodate the fact that we're going to have a new tracking system, and so probably don't need all the detail that's in there, and because we can have some of it online as well. And so that hasn't come forward as quickly as we had initially envisioned, just because there's a lot of moving parts to it when you're doing the permit tracking piece of it for planning permits, building permits, and business licenses, but we're also doing asset management and work orders. It's a convoluted process, and it's had its fits and starts, and sort of not anticipated. So we thought we'd have it in place earlier, and I thought we'd probably have our new, submittal checklist requirements in place earlier as well, but it just hasn't come to fruition yet.
Where are we with requirement for landscape plans? I thought that was part of.
So that's one of the things that's going to be on it's going to be on the list of things to pick up in our zoning code requirements. It's actually, if you walked into my office right now and looked at the whiteboard on the bottom, it says landscaping requirements on it. That's what it's for. It's
because especially this. With this project here, that was one of the things, if I remember right, that we requested them to do is a landscape plan because the proximity to the ESHA and the ESHA on the site, and yet we didn't get it. And so,
I mean, I wasn't aware that was something that you had asked for.
And, City, and I may not have.
I'm not going to say it was or wasn't. I know before this meeting, Cindy, as Commissioner Stowski did, sat down and watched the tape of the last one because it's been like a year.
Right.
And so she wanted to make sure that, we were addressing the things that were discussed by the commission at that time. And so she was cognizant of that as she was dealing with the applicant. So I know that process went on without having her sitting here. I can't really speak much more to it than that.
But if we could get that with submittals, as far as the photo simulation, I think it's even more important to have landscape plans in the design phase so that can be addressed by the Planning Commission too.
I thought it was sort of incredible when I got to the city and we didn't have a requirement for them to put any landscape plans for single family homes. I was like, really? Okay. Yeah. And it's actually something that's it ends up oftentimes being kind of a point of angst because they'll put their landscape plan, they will actually put a landscape plan together because most designers are used to doing that, and so we'll get our building submittal with a landscape plan in it, and then we're reviewing it at that point, and we have inconsistency with state requirements for the landscape ordinance and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, we're required to have a landscape ordinance. Right now, we default to the state requirement, and so we're going to have some form of it in there regardless into the new zoning code because it's state law.
On the subject of landscaping, I realize people always have the best intentions, and they're always on the best behavior when they come here for seeking the permit. But I like to think what, three and five and 10 years later, and you could see a considerable evolution from what was the original landscaping plan and what was implemented on day one, and now look 10 years down and see what that looks like. And I realize your office certainly does not have the resources to in any way periodically monitor this. So if somebody 3 or 4 years from now were to hire a landscape designer, would that landscaper have to sort of come to you and see what the limitations were and on the basis of that?
Very good question. And it really depends on the amount of irrigated landscape area. If you did all xeriscape landscaping, potentially no.
Huh.
But if you did irrigated landscaping over 500 square feet, yes, because there are certain specific requirements. And so would they necessarily come to us and talk to us about it? Probably not. Were it to come to our attention, could we do something about it? Absolutely, because it's state law. So what we'd really be looking at is, hey, what are you doing, and are you implementing it consistent? And it really deals all with water usage. It doesn't really even deal with what the plan is, and we don't have any policy language or guidance to tell us what the landscape plan is supposed to look like, other than state law talks about, hey, this is the type of irrigation you have to put in when you're using it, and it has to have, and you have to give us the flow amounts that come through it and detail the head types that you're using and all these types of things. I mean, it's a laundry list of things.
So it wouldn't in any way jeopardize the landscape designer's license to sort of knowingly ignore the plans or requirement that are readily available on file in your office. It wouldn't. There are no consequences for him if he...
There's none, and it's, I mean, this is also sort of similar to, you know, we approve a house that has a color pile that's roughly that, and then 2 years from now they come in and paint the whole thing dark brown. Yeah. We don't have any requirements that says you can't do that. You can go paint the house dark brown if you want. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like that. I mean, you can come in and change your landscape plan, have a landscape plan. It just depends on, right now, the only policies we have is to rely on the state. And
well, this is a little bit more serious in that, I mean, the landscape plan is presumably to sort of prevent the thriving of whatever the non-native plants and the spread, the ice plants and all that business. So it's more than just changing the color of the house. It has consequences for, you know, further down the beach.
Some of their landscape is going to be, you know, some of the landscape plan is covered by the mitigation measures in the MND. Those don't go away.
Yeah. Okay.
So if they were to do something that was inconsistent with that, and that was to be brought to our attention,
uh-huh.
just like if they were to put a paved patio in the buffer area,
yeah.
we would, and somebody let us know, we would immediately go there and tell them to take it out. And then we would work with them on putting together a restoration plan for that area, potentially. I mean, we'd have it evaluated to see if it needed to be, because it's in the, if it was in the buffer, which is most of the backyard, mm-hmm. it might not need anything done to it because it's not having an impact to the actual ESHA. But we would have to have that evaluated. And, you know, if they were, if they say if they excavated into what was actually the ESHA area and, you know, to put their patio in or something, then they could be looking at restoration plans and things like that. So.
And then, you know, with respect to the virtual rendering, you know, I agree, Richard. I mean, this is probably a $1 million construction job. And even though the cost of these sort of virtual renderings are coming down, I wouldn't want to pose a burden on somebody who was just doing a small square footage addition. But something of this scale, right on the beach, right next to a sensitive habitat, It seems like we should be seeing a virtual rendering from any significant public viewing vantage point, I believe. And I stand corrected because I didn't actually walk down to the beach and see what it looked like from there, but certainly from the north and the east side, yeah.
Yeah. Scott, do you envision the design guidelines as being an ongoing document that's and we'll be maintaining that as a separate document from the standards that will be developed for the general plan and the
that's a great question because I've been given a lot of thought to it because we had the conversation at the last general plan advisory committee meeting, and so I've been thinking about how to do that. I mean, if you lock them in stone inside of our zoning code, that's part of our LCP and requires when we want to make minor changes, like Mr. Sadowski was talking about, is there anything you want to change? If you want to make minor changes to it, it goes through the whole LCP process. So you're like, we'd like to change, you know, that to, you know, get rid of that A underneath the articulation. We don't like that method of providing articulation. Let's get rid of it. Like, okay. A year later, I walk back in. Hey, we're successful. We got through coastal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's how long it could take, you know, and it almost seems ridiculous for things like that, when it can be kind of a living and breathing document. So it's one of the conversations I'm having with our consultant about maybe some things are good to have in here, and then we're going to have all the development standards and maybe, you know, new floor area ratios and lot coverage things in the zoning code, which are the specific standards that we're dealing with. And then as we come out of it, maybe we expand, you know, the design guideline document to, you know, cover, like we've talked about in the past, our specific neighborhoods. Maybe that's how we refine it now. Or maybe we have some specific things that are in the code that are related to those specific neighborhoods, and we use the design guideline document that we have that's separate is kind of, these are all of the possibilities that you can do. And then in these specific neighborhoods, we want you to look at these specific items related to the types of houses, because we have small lots in North Morto Bay over here, and not, you know, in the south side of the city, we have larger lots and those, you know, that type of thing. And so we have specific things for each one of those. That's the conversation we're having. So we're in the process of developing it.
So essentially, you're going to reference in the LCP to the design guideline for that specific.
So yeah, I'm thinking that might be one of the better ways to do it. The good thing is in the general plan, the consultant for that is Michael Baker International. Our zoning codes actually is going to be done by the sub consultant, which is RRM. RRM is doing something very similar and is dealing with some design guidelines for various cities. This is one of the things they do regularly, and so we haven't started that conversation yet because we haven't gotten there. But I'm really interested in starting to do that to see what's the best way to do it. Give us some examples so we can all look at it and say, yeah, we want ours to look like that, because that would work really well for Morto Bay as opposed to this city's who did it that way. And so they have I think quite a bit of experience doing this in more recent times, and so I'm curious to sort of get some of that information out of them and make use of the sort of experts that we're paying good money to.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Okay.
The reason I brought it up is obviously if you said, oh no, that we're going to roll all that into the general plan, then there's really not a lot of point in putting much effort into the design guidelines if they're, you know. On the other hand, and I, you know, I think the two are going to interact. I mean, for example, let's say we do something about the requirement for the two covered enclosed parking spaces on these narrow lots. Yeah. That's going to open up other possibilities for the design guidelines,
yep.
Right? But if we're going to move forward with the two of them as independent documents, I think there's work that we could do on the design guidelines. We talked about this is going to be an interim thing, and then we're going to look at it and see where we need to adjust. And I think we should do that. I mean, I know that we're in the process of doing like a jillion other things right now. But
you're making me cringe a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that.
So what I was getting to was if we're going to take that tack, you know, because I still see things coming through that I consider problematic. I mean, I think this is an example of where, although we kind of let them slide a little bit, they really didn't detail all the different faces of the house to the mm-hmm. same level of quality, you mm-hmm. know? So maybe we need to put more examples into that, more thought into, you know. I see, you know, let's be straight, okay? Stucco is not a traditional building material here in Morro Bay. I mean, if you look around at the houses that are typical of Morro Bay, they're wood siding, they're shingle. If you look at what's coming through these days, it's like 99% plaster. So maybe we need to deal with that as an issue if we really want to maintain the character of our neighborhoods. So I do think we have work to do in terms of the design guidelines.
I don't disagree.
And I would propose that we ask the council to reauthorize them for a shorter period of time so that we can then get back to them maybe a year. You know, in a year we can get back to them. So
I mean, my thought process, as you were saying, it was, you know, we don't have that as a directive from the council at this point, but I think great idea. I mean, I just wanted to reauthorize. I was just saying 24 months so we can get through the process. I have no problem working on them as we do that, and I would even bring that to the council. I mean, if the commission desired, I'll bring that to the council's attention and say, we, you know, with the idea that we potentially like to, you know, as part of our next fiscal year goals to pick it up and start looking at it a little bit. You know, but we're also going to look at it as part of the general plan update. I mean, we're going to be having this conversation. We just haven't got, we had an initial conversation at the last meeting of the general plan advisory committee. We haven't jumped into that portion, you know, we haven't jumped into that end of the pool yet, but we're starting to get down that road, and so that's, so what are the conversations I need to start having with the consultants, like what's the best way to do this in the context of, you know, of what we have, where we want to go, how we want to get there, that type of thing. Because we're also doing design guideline development right now as part of the downtown waterfront strategic plan for the downtown, and give us some more information related to the waterfront as well.
But see, I kind of see that as a process that could fit together, because this commission now has a year plus of experience with the design guidelines. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I think if we were to have a discussion here, we could provide some pretty valuable, pretty useful input to the general plan process.
I'm completely open
as to
that.
Where to go with
it. I agree with that. I think it's... it's probably much more beneficial once we get into that to have a meeting or two where maybe it's a joint meeting with the GPAC or what have you. You get to call both of them to order. you know, I agree. I mean, I agree with that. I think this panel would be probably much more versed on it than, say, the General Plan Advisory Committee. I mean, there's, you know, broad breadth. There's 9 members on it, you know, but I think you being immersed in it and using them over time would certainly be able to add a lot of value to that discussion. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, again, it's one of the things on my list to talk with Michael Baker about, and we're meeting a phone call tomorrow with him, actually. It's one of my items to add to our, it was one of the items to talk to them about that I'll add to the agenda for them. So, anyway.
And they might even want, if we don't do it as a joint meeting, Michael Baker might want to attend that discussion, you know, so that they get the firsthand kind of comments.
Yeah, no, that's a good. I think those these types of things will probably morph over time, forever. You know, just as we use them longer, we'll see things that work and don't work, and we're like, ah, that whole policy we never touch. Why do we have it in here? And other ones where we say we don't have something to address X, Y, or Z that's come up with projects that you've seen roll through here. And yeah, I mean, I can see that happening on a regular, you know, basis over time.
So are you saying maybe just having it just like for a shorter time, maybe? Is that what you're thinking?
If we see this as a process that we're going to continue, we're going to keep the guidelines as a separate document, I would say go with that, with, you know, recommend that the council reauthorize them for a year and that they authorize the Planning Commission to re-examine them and recommend, during that period of time, and recommend modifications.
Yeah.
Kind of thought that was part of the original mandate, though, because they said these are going to be interim guidelines and we're going to look at them again in a year. And
well, we were so supposed to look at them through the the direction, hey, go look at it as part of the update process that we're doing with the general plan and LCP. Uh-huh. And fully intend to do that. That's, I mean, just because I wanted to authorize it for 24 months doesn't mean we weren't going to be looking at it on another course. I just wasn't sure what our final, I don't know what our end document's going to be or what it's going to look like. My guess is it might be a whole standalone document that has design guidelines in it for residential and commercial. Commissioner Lurie, we've talked about commercial design guidelines for a while now. Yeah. We're definitely going to have design guidelines for commercial buildings or buildings in general in the downtown, because that's part of the scope of the downtown waterfront strategic plan. It's also going to talk about some, you know, additional design guidelines for the waterfront, although that's probably going to be a little bit more difficult to implement because we have the waterfront master plan that probably has to be pushed out through. So we'll have to have some discussion about how we do that, but that'll, you know, that'll come out of the wash when we're done. So,
yeah. Should we also ask them to? Should we also ask the council to endorse the concept of maintaining the guidelines as a separate document from the general plan?
I mean, that's a good question.
We're kind of...
Yeah, I think it'd be, you know, kind of unwieldy to have to go through the LCP update to change some wording in it.
They're kind of a different... It's kind of a different document than the zoning ordinance. The zoning ordinance is very... number oriented. This is much more concept, you know, aesthetic oriented.
Now, the design guidelines give you, as a staff member, a little leeway to make these decisions instead of going through the process like LCP. Is that
Through that, and So I had this conversation like this every day. So what happens is somebody comes up to the front counter, one of the planners goes and talks to them, and they're talking about what the development standards are or what have you, or they're coming in with sketches and drawings, and they're like, hey, we want to do this. And invariably, they're standing at my door. They're like, hey, person wants to do this. And they're like, this doesn't look very good. You know, what about this? And I was like, yeah, well, we have design guidelines that tell you you can't do that. So go back there, show them the design guidelines and talk to them and say, hey, look, the level of review is design guidelines. You need to comply with that. It happened twice today, and it happened once yesterday, and I mean, it's like I said, it happens every day, and I'm always referring them back to them. I always try to reemphasize, hey, use these. We put them in place for a reason. They're a tool for you to use at the counter to talk to those folks, and so, they do roll them out and talk to them about them on a regular basis, so they do get used.
And that's a yes. Good reason to make them concise and user friendly and fairly distinct, and small little pamphlets of that.
So really what we're doing then, what we're recommending to the City Council mm-hmm. is that they adopt the interim residential guidelines as the residential design guidelines, that they drop that it become a permanent document distinct from the general plan. We're asking them to authorize request the Planning Commission to review those guidelines and make additional make suggestions for changes and additional provisions, and we're asking them to reauthorize them for a period of 12 months.
So you would want them reviewed like within the next 6 months, yeah?
I think is when we can.
You can make whatever recommendation you want. Issue being, it's not on our goals list right now, and we're max. I don't have capacity to do this. So literally, if they told me to go do it, I would say, no problem. Here's all the other things we're working on. Which thing do you not want me to work on? Yeah. I mean, as Chair Teff knows, we're trying to get through the just met again today with Ryan, our intern, on the sign ordinance, and we're getting ready to, if he hasn't already, he's going to be sending something back to you, trying to get that through, and then we were able to condense, we did the outreach on the RV and boat parking, and the findings out of that survey that we did are amazing. Well, they're actually not surprising. I actually thought this is what we were going to get back. It's just we had a lot of conversation. Council pushed pause, and what's coming out of the responses that we got for the 1,300 plus people is that they like, best way I can characterize it is that the policies that we have in place right now are just fine. And that's what the majority of folks are coming out with. So it'll be interesting to continue that conversation on down the road to bring it here. But that's also one of the things I need to do. I have to bring that back through here so we can develop some policy language with this group here. So anyway, I have a lot of things going on. So I would be saying that would be item to put on the objectives, goals and objectives list for FY 2017-18.
Is there anything that's emergency, or critical that you'd see that we would need to adapt that, in that interim?
While I'm saying that, I mean, just individually as a separate work program for me, don't really have the capacity at this point because we have all these other goals and objectives right. going on. Do have capacity to have some conversations in the general plan and LCP update process because those are issues that are in there. They're part of our issues and policies document. And so getting a little bit of direction out of that and vetting that through the Planning Commission makes a lot of sense. And that's part of what we're supposed to be doing anyway. So I don't say that it's going to be, we're talking about it now and you're never going to hear about it again. I think it's more likely that you will, but some of it's going to bubble up out of that process as we move along. And then fast forward, when it's it's one of our objectives, then we'll be working on it. That'd be one of the things I'm supposed to be sitting down here with you, and we'll do something similar that we did last time, probably.
Well, I also think that having it sort of on the horizon, it gets us to be thinking about it. You know what I'm saying? And as we, you know, as we see these projects come by, come through, we can be writing down, gee, I really wish we had something in the residential design guidelines about X, you know, or Y, you know, so that each of us kind of has some ideas to bring to the table when we finally get around to it. And so it's not all on you to, you know, to generate the ideas.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Yeah. So like I said, I'll always take all the help I can get.
So would it be out of place to maybe make a suggestion to the city council with regards to, like, you know, what we talked about, the viewpoint?
I'll tell you what I'll do with that. We don't have to do that.
No, we don't have to.
That literally can be a submittal requirement. We can make submittal requirements, whatever they are. I literally need to go back and see where we're at with the document, because I had Cindy and Cindy was working on it with Joan, maybe. And I don't know. I actually don't exactly know where we were at with that. I think once the general plan started and we really started getting information in, Cindy's helping me with that. She's kind of my number two on that. And it's taken up a lot more time than initially we'd thought. Spending probably double the amount of time, as is Cindy right now, on that. So we've sort of had to do a reallocation of work in the department. I just need to go find out where that's at. And it's a valuable thing to add about it. And internally, we talk about it all the time. So it's might as well. Yeah. No reason why we can't roll it out and put it on there now.
You know, that and the landscape plans.
Yeah.
Can't require a landscape plan because it's not a requirement in any of our policies. I can require three-dimensional drawings because we're expecting to get those to show compliance with design guidelines and neighborhood compatibility and those types of things. I don't have anything that says you have to have a landscape plan. In fact, it says you don't have to have them.
Okay. Can we insert that into the design guidelines on the interim basis?
That's more of a requirement. I could research it a little bit. Be a little uncomfortable, because really what we're talking about is we're going to have landscape. It's going to be you usually have a landscape policy and requirements in your zoning code, and it tells you what you're supposed to give us, what's right. supposed to be included in them. It'll pick up all the state water requirements that go along with it, and it'll rule it out. That's usually where you find them. You don't usually find them elsewhere in cities. I've never actually seen them anywhere other than in the zoning code.
But that'll definitely come out with the general plan. Revision and then work its way down into the zoning code.
Yeah, yeah. Like 2 years away. Though.
Yeah,
In the guidelines, again, there isn't anything specific in the guidelines that says the percentage of the front yard that can be devoted to hardscape.
Percentage is a development standard that goes in the zoning code. Our design guidelines do have landscaping discussions in them. So there's a section of it that deals with landscaping. So I mean, a little bit. It's not a lot. There's not much to it.
I thought about it afterwards. At least in my thinking, the reason I found this acceptable is probably emotionally, is because the neighbors for three or four on either side had not done this. But if we began to hear that scores of neighbors wanted to essentially pave their front yards in this area with permeable pavers, we wouldn't like that.
Well, there's whole sections of this town that have it without permeable paving.
It's just straight paved.
Straight asphalt.
Yeah.
You know, from property line to property line.
Seen some with just rocks, weeds sticking out of them.
So we have to decide whether that's within the rights of the property owner to do it or not.
Well, it's not, because we have a standard that says you cannot have over X amount of linear footage of your property frontage devoted to driveway.
But permeable we allow.
No, not if it's considered a driveway all the way to the street.
We have
the ordinances against parking in the front yard, which
right.
also.
Not to belabor the point, but for somebody driving down the street, it's not going to be important to him whether it's a driveway or a permeable patio. It's just that there's not going to be anything green in front
right.
of his house.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
That's what we.
But that policy, that concept could well be part of the design guidelines. We definitely could further develop the landscaping section of the design guidelines.
Yeah.
Then that may be, depending on how we did it, could form the basis for requiring a landscape plan. So it could happen a little earlier that way, I suppose.
Yeah. That makes sense. That seems to be a way to get. You're preaching to the choir here because I thought it was weird that we didn't have a requirement to have it. You know, you drive around and you look at some of the properties and you're like, okay. There's nothing you could do. You're like, the policy says that's completely acceptable.
Right.
And I think that, but everybody recognizes that it's really not that acceptable. That's probably not what we want our neighborhood to look like. So anyway, I do have one question. I am going to, take what you referenced for our submittal checklist and require the renderings to go along with it. I'm going to do it for new single family homes, obviously commercial development. But I was thinking, substantial additions and remodels to single family homes might warrant them as well. So do you want to, what do you think? Additions over 50% of the existing square footage, additions or 1,000 square feet, or do you have a
But definitely anything that has to come before us. That would
Well,
be
I mean, you don't want to say, somebody's going to add, sometimes they have to come to you because they're in an appeal zone, they're small additions. Yeah. I mean, do you really care if a single family addition for a bathroom in the back has a rendering? No one can see it.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, yes, there's some discretionary authority I will take on myself, but I don't know you want to necessarily always have that because sometimes a two-dimensional drawing can be adequate when you're doing something at single level and that type of thing.
Yeah,
maybe two-story additions.
Anything that would increase the height more than 2 feet. Yeah. That's one criteria. If they're mm-hmm.
Or anything over a 50%, floor area increase. I think that's a pretty standard.
That's pretty good. I think that's pretty simple and straightforward, and I don't think there's any ambiguity there. So I'm pretty good with that.
It'd be hard to define this, but or located in a particularly sensitive view area.
I would definitely add that. I was already kind of thinking of that. We do have view areas that are identified in our LCP, and so I would say anything that's in those corridors should probably have them.
What about alteration of the building elevation that faces the street? It seems like that should be. Seems like the street-facing facade should be the more sensitive.
Yeah, but it may just be a minor.
To X amount degree. You see what I'm saying? Right. In other words, if you got a broken window in the front of your house and you're going to change the window, I agree.
But if it's at staff level, does staff level need a three-dimensional rendering, or could it be? That could probably be handled by an elevation.
In many cases, we're going to change this out of the LCP update process, but in many cases, you can come in if you're in an R1 zone and you're compliant. There's no review requirement.
Right.
That needs to be fixed. Because I find myself, having to do things like rely on the design guidelines to say you're inconsistent to make them change something that would wholeheartedly be inconsistent with the development that's in that neighborhood. There's a reason why you want to have at least some review, whether it's, we just call it a site plan review for simple stuff, that's fine. It's $150 or something, that's fine. As long as we get a discretionary shot at it, that's probably worthwhile. So, anyway, that's not for this, that's really for the LCP update. But anyway.
So it's a substantial change.
Yeah, and I was thinking, how do you define, say, something that would cause relocation of a wall on the relocation or modification of the shape of the wall facing the street, something?
Or foundation, maybe,
There are a lot of changes that you could make to a front facade that you can absolutely see just fine in a two-dimensional drawing. In fact, when you're keeping the scale of the front of the house, doing a little bit of this is really not going to change it a whole lot. It's when you're doing what Chair Teff talked about. You're like, okay, we're going to do the roof, and now we have a flat roof, and now we're changing it like that. Well, that changes the whole character of the house. Those types of things you would want to change. Or you have a door that's got a simple little overhang, and now we're putting a big front porch on it. That changes what the streetscape looks like. And we do stuff like that depending on how close it is to the street. So there is some you know, sort of discretion that has to go into that, I think.
Well, overall, it sounds like you've been using them design guidelines quite a bit with your staff.
I bring them forward all the time because we didn't have it before. I mean, it's one of the reasons why as soon as the issue came up, I said, let's do this because the city needs something right now to help out. And, you know, it's helped. So, and I appreciate them anyway. So I think I take the input that you gave me on the, you know, for our submittal requirements, and I think I got a pretty good idea what we're going to do, and so we'll all. We already started drafting language for this in it.
So do you need an official recommendation, or this is just a discussion?
That was okay. So that piece was just the discussion. I do want the recommendation to council for the design guidelines. So right. So you talked about the 12-month authorization to have a standalone document. And then to be given direction to work through, you know, additions and additions to the plan or revisions.
I think our consensus, and the council may or may not agree with it, is that it's useful to have this as a standalone document, regardless of the general plan, and therefore we really shouldn't be considering an interim document anymore.
That's great. That's really great input. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Do you need a motion on that?
I don't need a motion. Just you're kind of all nodding your head saying that all sounds good. Is there anybody that doesn't agree with what the direction that we're going? Okay, that's all I need. I just really wanted a recommendation kind of out of you to take forward versus me showing up to them and them going, did you talk to the Planning Commission about this? And you going, no. they usually, because you're the ones that use it, want to know your input, so that's why I'm asking it. Yeah.
Kind of in a little bit of a related, but not so related, topic is I've been seeing new street furniture in downtown, you know, and it's all concrete. Part of the downtown design guidelines that had been working before specifically stated that, you know, trash receptacles and planters not be made of concrete. You know, have you had any discussions with Public Works or anything on that?
I know we distributed some new trash cans because we're getting a bunch of complaints that certain areas of town didn't have enough trash receptacles, and the trash receptacles were always full. And then so stuff was spilling out of them, birds were taking things out. So we were getting a lot of complaints, and so they went through, and I can't apologize. I don't remember the number that they purchased a bunch of new ones and put them in the downtown along the Embarcadero as well. I just can't remember how many they got, and I wasn't involved with it because it was in Public Works.
Yeah.
It wasn't really me.
Just seems like, you know, we probably shouldn't be, well, you know, maybe not adding more of the stuff that is not supposed to be there in the first place. We can pick a different style and as they retire them out.
Not to mention the fact that this is September, and I suspect that the excess trash problem is going to be pretty negligible for the next 6 months.
I think you might be correct.
Yeah. But, there was a concerted effort to paint them and tile them and, you know, do artwork on them to try to mitigate the look, and then all of a sudden there's new ones being put in. So
okay, yeah. So what documents did we have that said
there was? Downtown design guideline that was. What was the name of that? Somebody help me.
Was that out of the RUDAT?
The RUDAT.
Oh, the RUDAT.
Oh, okay.
You know, there was a.
But that was never really adopted, was it?
It was test. Or they did two test blocks, and that was what the street lights on the two test blocks were from, and the additional planters, and that was.
I didn't realize that.
The focus changed. This was 20 years ago, and but there was a section in there stating that they probably shouldn't be concrete planters.
Well, and besides that, we're in the process of developing this downtown waterfront strategic plan, so it didn't make sense to buy a lot of stuff before that's done.
Yeah, and part of what it's going to look at, what it's looking at is street furniture, streetscape stuff, improvements, and those types of things, too. So that's one of the things they're getting input on.
Great.
It's really, I mean, we really, literally was just talking with the portion of the Michael Baker team that's doing that outreach, you know, and putting the things in the list of things they wanted to talk to folks about, identifying the focus groups and getting the right people to plug into those focus groups and those types of things. We were working on that this morning. So So we're getting ready to go out there and start, they're getting ready to go out there and start hitting the streets to talk to people.
It was really, it was kind of interesting, too, the time off. You know, where we were, they actually had some really nice metal ones with clear plastic bags, so the sanitation workers could come by and just see if they were full or not. Didn't even have to stop, and if they were full, they could just pull them. And
really?
Yeah, and so they were just essentially open metal bags, and they hung the plastic.
That's interesting.
Plastic bags on the inside, and it was you watched them, and they were basically on the run. They would be able to pull them up, and so and they were fairly small. And they were really, the design was really interesting on them, and really clean. So I thought that being able to see them from the street, from the vehicle, was an added advantage.
That's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I can't say that I've ever seen anything like that. That was, where were you at?
Paris.
Oh, okay.
That was a Frenchman.
I mean, interesting concept. Not to say that we don't have them around here somewhere. It's not something I've run a clock. And that's absolutely something. I mean, yeah, it's something I pay attention to. You know, sort of street furniture and trash can types of stuff. I watch it. I look at these stuff. I take pictures of them. My wife slaps me on the shoulder. Stop doing that.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I have that same affliction.
Yeah. So, anyway.
You were eating German food and studying French engineering, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I see frequent mention in the newspaper, one near my community, another is dealing with marijuana sales and retail outlets. Are we going to be getting something like that?
So we're going to have the initiative on the ballot. Okay, and so if it passes, you know, then that's the recreational marijuana initiative, right? And so if that does pass, then, you know, we're going to be diving into that. The state's working on programs right now. In fact, is it tomorrow? I have to look at my calendar. In San Luis, there's a meeting on the notice of preparation for the EIR associated with the development of some of the policy that the state's coming up with for medical marijuana and regular marijuana uses potentially, I guess. Maybe it's medical. I have to go back and look at it. But there's a meeting, scoping meeting. I think it's a scoping meeting for the EIR in San Luis. So if that happens, then we're going to be spending a whole lot more time developing policy. I think some of the ideas, let's see where it goes here and then see what some of the other folks are doing so we're not recreating the wheel. Although our city attorney's office got a pretty wide breadth of experience on different topics, and this is apparently one of them. So
we're going to be developing local ordinances that people have to follow in order to violate federal law.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
I think the last time we had a situation like this was about 1860.
Yeah.
Well, we've kind of moved into planning commissioner comments. So, are there any additional planning commissioner comments? So,
I do have one.
Yeah,
I do have one. North Morro Bay. We had that hearing the last hearing we had on those fuel tanks.
Panorama, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Panorama. Since that hearing, I've come to my attention that three of the they had the goats there, and three of them had died of, I'm told, poisoning, so we don't know if some of the stuff they ate or what happened there, but the owner had taken the goats away before, you know, the city or the county could take a look at them. But either way, I just, you know, there were, you know, as you know, there was a lot of concerned citizens, and I especially, you know, like Scott, I appreciate the workers, you know, that the workers say, hey, you know, I wouldn't let my workers work, but I worked in the industry in aerospace, and there is things that I was exposed to that I wouldn't take my grandkid anywhere near. But, you know, we get paid hazmat and all that. So just because their workers are going to be safe, you know, I felt for that one lady, especially with the youngin' around. So I am a little bit more than a little bit concerned, you know, making sure that, you know, and I know that you got something to say about this, but I'm just giving it a heads up.
I completely appreciate that, and it's sort of why, you know, we're taking another, can't really speak to this, it's not an agendized item, but why we're, you know, some other issues have come up related to this, and so why we're taking a little bit of a step back on it right now and going to be doing some more outreach to the neighborhood over there, I think, which is the more information and input we can get back from that, the better prepared we can be to answer questions that are raised about the, you know, the concerns that we heard at the dais last time. And I mean, it's, I think it's probably a halfway decent project that's coming forward, but it needs, we need to be able to answer all the questions appropriately. And so that's what we're trying to do. I mean, that's where we're at with it. So anyway, I don't want to talk about it much, it's not an agendized item, but it is something we're going to be spending some more time on and some more neighborhood outreach, which I think is valuable. So.
Scott, what's the end use of that site?
It's zoned residential with a PD overlay on it.
And what's...
R1 with the PD overlay.
So 6,000 square foot lots?
Yeah, but it has the PD overlay on it, so they could be smaller lots if they came up with some sort of design to keep things off the slope or put it more to the flat spots or what have you. It just depends. I mean,
and seeing as I wasn't here, how much acreage was there?
It's around 10.
10 acres. Okay, thank you.
That site is adjacent to the other Chevron property, right?
It abuts it, yes. It abuts some of the other Chevron property that's out in the county, correct? That whole area, it wraps around that whole area of, you know, the city. The Chevron properties do, the 3,000 plus acres.
I'm just still wondering if it wouldn't be possible to have a temporary route to a different road that doesn't involve going through the neighborhoods, since it's crossing somebody else's property is not an issue for quite a distance. You know, I wonder if it might be more economical for Chevron just to run a bulldozer from wherever they need to get to, you know, and make a temporary dirt road that could be, you know, repaired at the end of the process.
I'll ask. I have contact with the Chevron representatives, and so I can give that contact information to the applicant. So that's actually a worthwhile something to look at anyway. Whether they let it happen or not, or whether it be, you know, you can also imagine all of the commentary in the concerns that would come from the neighborhood over there. What are you developing over here?
Right.
But I mean, if we did it, you know, appropriate amount of outreach, we could probably curb some of that. So, but I mean, I think it's worth looking at to see if there's a possibility there. So I'll ask.
And the part of the incentive is they won't have 150 North Morro Bay residents yelling at them. You know, I mean, this is not generating a lot of goodwill in North Morro Bay.
Yeah.
Well, this is no longer the project is no longer a Texaco project.
Well, no, that site belonged to the Navy.
Yeah. Mm.
It was a Navy site. It wasn't Chevron, but Chevron's not doing anything over there, and there are roads all over the property, so there may be the potential that they could, you know, do something like that. There's actually roads that come up behind that property that are kind of like farm road type things that haven't been used for a long time, because I don't know that they actively graze over there or anything, so no one's driving over there to go check on their cows or whatever, but other areas of the site, they actively graze, and other areas of the Chevron property, they actively graze, and there's roads to get to those areas so you can go check on your cows, so,
or goats,
or whatever you got over there. So, yeah.
Okay. Community Developer Director comments?
Sure. So just wanted to remind you that you have the sort of joint special meeting with the Council and the Harbor Advisory Board on the 27th at 4 o'clock. It'll be 4 to 6. You're going to get a presentation of the Embarcadero sidewalk widening and what we're calling Centennial Parkway sort of a project, which is really a redo of the Centennial stair plaza area there going across the street over into the street end that sits between the Libertine and Rose's Landing. RRM's the consultant that we've hired to do this. The plan that's going to be presented there is, I think, online now and is representative of the input that was received through stakeholder interviews and through the workshop that we had back in May, end of May. So that's sort of what it is, and the idea would be to get you guys look at the plans, get your input for that. It's not a one-size-fits-all. There's a couple different, there's two different plans, site plans for the Centennial Parkway concept idea, so that's kind of a mix and match. It's two plans, so you can kind of show all the ideas that came out of that outreach, and so that you can kind of look at them and see, you know, what we want to do there. And then there's the widening project for the Embarcadero sidewalk includes improvements to the street, includes options for delivery truck parking and unloading, as opposed to having them in the street. That was one of the things that everybody wanted. No one likes driving down there on a weekend in the middle of summer and having four delivery trucks unloading, so you have to drive in the opposing lane of traffic to get through there. So it has some of the things, some parking options and unloading options to address that as well. So. And a portion of the plan does show a piece that's one way and then goes to two ways on the other side of it, but gives options to have two-way traffic through there, too. It just kind of depends on what everybody's interested in.
Are we going to have a package that's going to be presented to us?
Our RM's going to present – so I'm going to give a brief introduction, not unlike what I just told you right now, and then introduce RM. RM will provide a presentation to you that details the process they went through, shows you the plans, explains them. Takes whatever input. This meeting is really designed to get input from the Planning Commission and the HAB because we're going to represent at the regular council meeting that starts at 6. And that'll be for council and public input. So the special meetings that you have there early aren't often well attended. And so we want to make sure that there's every opportunity is provided and that the council, you know, oftentimes wants to, you know, speak to it, and so that you're not as limited. So they're probably going to hold their comments until we meet at the council meeting and take and allow the Planning Commission and the HAB to provide their comment.
So we're gonna meet. Is it going to be council, Planning Commission, and HAB meeting at a special meeting?
It's a special meeting. Starts at 4 o'clock.
So you got potentially like 17 people.
Yeah, but we're representing it at the council meeting, which is where the council is going to provide their comments, why we're doing it twice.
Okay.
It's really – so the initial meeting for 2 hours is really to give the presentation to the Planning Commission and the HAB, and the HAB to provide the comment.
Okay. And so then how – there's going to – see, it's got, you got – to me, it seems like – then are they going to make any decisions at the council meeting?
We're going to get direction, and then we're going to get a final plan back, and then that's – one of the questions I'm asking the city council is, how do you want us to take the final plan back? The scope of the project ends there, and we would have to spend more money if we were going to make other changes to it. So the options would be either it just comes right back to council and council makes a decision. They might be comfortable with that. But really, the other option is bring it back to Planning Commission and have bring the recommendation forward.
Yeah, because, you know, how are they going to process that, right? We're going to have a talk, right? Because, you know, there'll be some people coming. Right.
I would think so, yeah.
Right. And so you're going to have the HAB and the Planning Commission. So we're going to talk about this. They're not going to really have a chance to process what we...
Council's going to get to listen to everything. Well, the council and RRM's going to get to listen to all what you guys say. They're going to bring... This is what they do. They're going to take that input in, just like they took the input from the workshop and the stakeholder outreach that they did to develop the plans that you're going to see. It's basically like that. They want to take
the input. Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's like a half hour to process this information. I mean, that's...
The plans are available to you now. You can look at them now. You can provide... In fact, I don't know if we did. We were going to maybe send out an email, but we would happy to take any written comments you have before or after you've looked at it. And all that will go into the mix.
Okay.
I definitely want to encourage that because it... You know, then you have your information that's down in writing, and so that can be conveyed directly to them, so there's no At least they have all of it to bring into the
but
mix.
But you know what I'm saying, Scott. A lot of times when we get discussing, I may have something I'm thinking, and then Joe or
That interaction
Dr. Kev
is very valuable.
Triggers something. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what, this guy, all of a sudden we get it's more organic, right? And then when you to process all, this is a big deal, right? It's pretty big deal what we're talking about.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to make a request, okay, to this problem, because this has happened. This is not the first time that we've had this joint meeting, and then the let's don't do that anymore. Okay, if we're going to have a joint meeting, let's don't do it right before city council meeting. Okay, because it really does feel like there's a time constraint and a constraint on.
You should definitely convey this to the council. I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, this is we do this for a reason, because it's on a council meeting date. Everybody's they're available, and we try to get a majority of the, at least we can have a quorum for the planning commission and have. I mean, so that's why it's done that way. I appreciate the comment, and I appreciate how the process works. I get it. It's just,
but the truth of the matter is, from my observation so far, there has been no benefit to making it a joint meeting. It would have worked just as well to bring it to the regular planning commission meeting, and then subsequently the next week bring it to the regular city council meeting. So
that could have been a process. Yes. Every meeting that we add to it adds about $1,000 to the budget. So we spent most of the money that was cobbled together for this project on the outreach and the design. And the availability for the consultant to come to these meetings is expensive. And they'll be here with at least two or three of their folks, and so, I mean, there's a budgetary limitation. We have so much money for the project. Do you want them to spend them attending the meetings or designing the project? And it's a balance. It really is. This was a $50,000 project. And so it's a balance. I mean, literally, I'm going to be telling the council what I just told you.
Yeah.
Hey, you have the review and you have the opportunity to bring it back. If changes are made after this, there'll be scope changes and money from the budget that will have to be added to it. So,
well, they put a pause on the WRF project, and now they're supposedly under budget. So they could have taken, they spent $1.7 million on that. We're not anywhere near going anywhere. So, I don't buy that. I think that it's it's kind of like it doesn't seem right. You know what I mean?
This project started off as a public works project that wasn't going to any boards, just so we're clear. The amount of review and process this has gone through at this point is far and away beyond what was ever, originally discussed when the project came forward. I literally, when I saw this was going forward and they were going to just go send it out to have some designs done, I was like, wait a second. why? And I was like, why are Public Works and the Harbor Department doing this? There's levels of it. I understand the concern. We're doing as much as we can with the money that was allocated to do the project. That's all I can say.
I'm curious, since money is a concern, why is this being done as a separate project from the potential commercial design guidelines that will be done as part of the general plan process and the general plan itself? I mean, it seems like there's a certain duplication of effort here.
Don't disagree with that. This was goals and objectives, FY 15-16. So it's been around for a while, and as these things developed at that time, we had, this was a standalone, separate, hey, go look at widening the sidewalk over here and redo the stair. It's gotten a little bit larger, which is not uncommon. You start talking to people and they're like, what about this? What about that? And so scope changes is pretty common. And then down the road, it also, the goal at the time for the downtown waterfront strategic plan was not that. It was a separate downtown specific plan. But I was like, we're doing the general plan, though. We don't need a specific plan. You do a specific plan if your current policies don't address things adequately. So either roll it into that, or let's do an action item project, which is a strategic plan. It'll give us action items. Hey, go do this over, and it'll be a 10-year plan. It'll be have implementation pieces to it, and we'll just that'll be something that goes into the budget every year, and we're going to go pick off pieces of it as we do. You know, that might be signage somewhere, might be furniture somewhere. I don't know. It'll have things like that in it. So,
but I mean, not to show my ignorance, but isn't that what the general plan does? I mean, doesn't the general plan come out with policies, but then underneath that is programs?
The general plan on a big overarching view, yes, does that, absolutely. When we're done with the general plan, it'll have a lot of things in there that it tells us to go do over the next 20, 25 years. I mean, it'll be a bunch of stuff, and that'll be part of it too. Strategic plans. One, specific plans are much more expensive than a strategic plan, but strategic plan you typically are the shorter term documents and give quicker hits for those for specific items. Could it have been combined into that? Yes, but it was a goal that was moving forward and started as a specific plan and went into something that was more refined. And so we're going to be done with that by the end of this year. I mean, the strategic plan process is going to be done probably by December.
So the general plan might have the program. Or the action item for the general plan might have been go develop a downtown waterfront strategic plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's what that it'll tell us to do other things like that in other areas. It might say, hey, North Embarcadero doesn't have a plan. Go do one of those. I mean, the general plan would say that. So.
But everything we're going to hear with this plan is currently online, so if I can read it in advance.
Yeah, we should have gotten an email from. We said your email wasn't working. It's on the agenda.
Yeah. Microphone. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just confirming that everything for this special meeting is online, so I can read it.
It is on the it's under the agenda section on the website. So, yeah.
Okay.
That was all I had.
If we are done with our commenting, then we will adjourn to our next meeting, which will be here at on October 4th at 6 p.m. Thank you very much.
Except for a joint meeting.
Oh.